I'm Marty Moscowen, and this is Radio Times on Radio Row at the Democratic National Convention. Vice President Joe Biden got the delegates and his party fired up last night at the DNC in South Philadelphia. He was effusive about Hillary Clinton, the American people, and called Donald Trump the least qualified candidate for president in the country's history. Next, Michael Bloomberg, an independent, called Trump a dangerous demagogue and declared, "I'm a New Yorker and I know a con when I see one." Then Tim Kaine accepted the vice presidential nomination from his party and called on Donald Trump to release his tax returns. The headliner was President Obama, who said Hillary Clinton was more qualified than anyone who has ever run for the White House, including himself and Bill Clinton. And then he went on to call Donald Trump a fraud. Well, we have two guests to talk about last night's speech. Robert Costa, reporter for The Washington Post, joining us from the studios of WHYY in Center City, Philadelphia. And Robert Costa, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great to join you.
Also with us is Dick Pohlman, sitting across from me, national political columnist at Newsworks WHYY. And Dick, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
It's great to be here, Marty.
And the two of you, Robert Costa and Dick Pohlman, have been guests on Radio Times in the past. And yes, that's the house band. They have been serenading us all this week. We will miss them. Well, let me go to a portion of the speech last night. This was President Obama talking about what it was like to take on and have Hillary Clinton as a formidable opponent 8 years ago.
8 years ago, you may remember, Hillary and I were rivals for the Democratic nomination. We battled for a year and a half. Let me tell you, it was tough. Because Hillary was tough. I was worn out. She was doing everything I was doing, but just like Ginger Rogers, it was backwards in heels.
Robert Costa, what was the message from last night's DNC?
It was a powerful speech from the president. Summing up his 8 years and framing the future of the Democratic Party, not only as a party that he'd passed the baton on to Secretary Clinton, but a party in his image, with his temperament, his tone, his policy focus. And I think he was speaking to the country, trying to convince them to stay with this Obama project that started 12 years ago at that famous Democratic convention, to stay with him when it comes to this project of change and representing diversity here in America.
And Robert, probably his last big speech as president of the United States.
It was. And I was speaking this morning to my colleague, David Marinus, from The Washington Post, who, of course, wrote Obama, the Story, one of the great Obama biographies. And I said, where did this stand? And he said, well, it's one of the great Obama speeches. I think it's because it comes at the end of his term, the end of his time in the White House. And he's a historic president, perhaps looking ahead to another historic president and Secretary Clinton. And this was a big picture speech from the president. But I also heard some tone and some messages there for the suburban voters, like places in the Philadelphia suburbs, who may be intrigued by Trump's populism and Trump's focus on national security. The president was saying, hey, stick with us.
Dick, let me get you in on the conversation. Both of you were at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland and, of course, here in Philadelphia as well. What's the biggest difference between these two conventions?
Well, I think what I was struck by most last night was how, and if I can quote myself, because it's early,
because it's early in the morning, right?
I thought the Democrats basically raided the Republican pantry and took all the thematic goodies. So they came off as pro-patriotism, pro-optimism, maybe most importantly, pro-military, and with a little riff from Michael Bloomberg, pro-sanity, because he was drawing the distinction. So the main thing was that the Republican convention, you know, seemed kind of dark, and it was like a dark dystopic America that was being painted, and there was like a million things wrong, and there's crime in the streets, and, you know, our greatness is past. And so what I think that left a big opening for Obama to sort of turn that around and basically say, you know, no, we're optimistic. We're, in fact, going to steal Reagan's sunny optimism. And there was a shout-out to Reagan in
his
speech.
I heard
that. And so there was a lot of, you know, a lot of hits on patriotism, a lot of stuff about our military being the strongest in the world. And, you know, that kind of stuff may resonate with, I mean, if the battleground indeed is in, I don't know, Midwestern suburbs in particular, you know, that's the kind of stuff, centrist stuff. And if you seize the center, that's how you win presidential elections.
Robert, would it be fair to say that, that part of the message out of the Democratic convention is essentially 4 more years, the idea that if Hillary Clinton becomes president, she will continue what Obama started?
That is both a promise and peril for Secretary Clinton as she prepares to take the stage tonight, because she has the backing in such a full-throated way from Vice President Biden, from President Obama. But it's difficult for any national political candidate running from the same party as an 8-year incumbent to try to make the case to the country that 4 more years would be the best option. Usually the country is itching for change. It's very unusual to see a party hold the White House for 12 years. I think part of the way Democrats are making the argument to the country is lessening the ideological component of their agenda. You didn't hear a lot of left-wing ideas last night. You heard, as Dick is spot on, it was about the country in a big way, patriotism, leadership, maturity. And this was not really a right versus left presentation. And I think that's important because the Democrats this year aren't really making a case for national health care or bigger government. It's for a steady hand at the wheel.
I do want to play a clip, but let me ask you a question, Dick Pullman, first. And clearly last week the Republicans in Cleveland, I would say demonized Hillary Clinton. Would it be fair to say that the Democrats in Philadelphia are demonizing Donald Trump, or is it something different from that?
Well, I would argue there's a qualitative difference. I mean, I think, you know, the locker up is, I think, on a different scale than making the argument, as was made last night, most prominently by Leon Panetta.
Who got booed, I should say.
Yeah, who got booed by some Bernie people. Donald Trump keeps showing his ill preparedness when he invited the Russian hackers to commit espionage on his political opponent. And so, you know, I think there's something a little bit more substantive about that argument. Let me just make one very, very quick point, pick up on something Bob said. You know, he's right when he says it's been rare that after 8 years of one president and one party, that the next president stays in the same party. But it's happened. It did happen as recently as 1988. After 8 years of Reagan, his vice president, George H.W. Bush, was elected. So it can be done. And I think one of the things that they're trying to use to make that happen here is, all right, so it's Obama's basically saying, all right, maybe on some level it's the status quo, but he's basically saying that he was the change agent, and this is the continuity of change, that this is the continuity of change in the sense that, you know, the American experiment is still imperfect. We're still trying to make it better, and she is in that tradition. And I think when they both came out at the end and you had that tableau of the two of them, that visual, and you had a black man and a white woman joined on the stage, that's something the founding fathers could never have envisioned in a million years. And so I think that was potentially a powerful image.
Let me play another clip from last night. Again, this is the president talking at the DNC and pushing back against Donald Trump. Let's give it a listen.
We're not a fragile people. We're not a frightful people. Our power doesn't come from some self-declared savior promising that he alone can restore order as long as we do things his way. We don't look to be ruled. Our power comes from those immortal declarations first put to paper right here in Philadelphia all those years ago. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that we, the people, can form a more perfect union. That's who we are. That's our birthright. The capacity to shape our own destiny.
And again, that was the president speaking last night at the DNC. Going back to you, Robert Costin, we could do a whole hour on what Donald Trump said yesterday about hackers and Russia and Hillary Clinton, some 30,000 emails. But it just seems like such an unusual thing for a candidate to say. And I guess part of the question is there ever any bad press for Donald Trump?
It was an extraordinary turn for Trump at his news conference in Florida when he seemed to beckon Russia to get involved in the presidential campaign, to find, he said, and disclose these lost emails from Secretary Clinton's private server from her tenure as Secretary of State. Trump has since, in the ensuing hours, backed down a bit from that kind of statement. He went on Fox News this morning and said he was being sarcastic, and many Republicans have echoed that point. I spoke to the Intelligence Committee Chairman in the House, Devin Nunes. He said Trump was being sarcastic. But I think on the press question, I'm not so sure, because he's so ubiquitous on the airwaves. Every day it's such a barrage. For any other normal candidate, if Mitt Romney had said what Trump said about Russia, it'd be
a disqualifier, wouldn't it be?
I don't know what's disqualifying, but it'd be something that would rupture the entire campaign. And this is just yet another blip, yet another story.
Yeah, well, go ahead, Dick Pullman. And how much do you think the press bears some responsibility for that? The press, broadly speaking.
I think it's hard to generalize these things because the press is so fragmented and has so many different offshoots now. But my impression is that the free media, quote unquote, that Trump courts and has been helped by, that the free media has gotten more skeptical and has gotten more questioning. And I just hear, you know, a lot more discussion about that, about trying to, you know, hold him to some kind of account. And, you know, he went on CBS News, I think it was yesterday morning, and was asked repeatedly not just about the hacking thing, but about when are you going to release your tax returns? And, you know, there's talk about, you know, it should be brought up every time anybody talks to him. But on the other thing about what his step back from what
that
he said about
the
Russians. Yeah, about what he said, he's being sarcastic. The problem there is potentially, and what the Democrats, I think, can argue rightfully, is that, you know, when you're talking about the most incredibly sensitive national security issues that affect the entire world, you have to be extremely careful with what you say. You have to weigh your words, you have to weigh your tone, because they can easily be misinterpreted or interpreted however the people on the receiving end want to interpret it. So, you know, he can say after the fact he was being sarcastic. Well, there can be people who hear it the first time who don't care whether it's sarcastic enough. They can make use of it. And, you know, wars, I don't want to get apocalyptic here in any ways, but let's just say conflicts and hostilities can occur because of purposeful misunderstandings. And so I think that's one of the arguments that the Democrats will continue to make. I assume that Hillary Clinton will talk about that preparedness argument again tonight.
Well, let's take a very short break and we'll get back to our conversation. We are on Radio Row, our final day here on Radio Row at the Democratic National Convention. A familiar voice and face sitting across from me, Dick Pullman, national political columnist at Newsworks WHYY. And sitting probably in my chair, as we call it, at WHYY is Robert Costa, reporter for The Washington Post. And we've been talking about the Democratic National Convention here in Philadelphia, playing some selections from last night's speeches. And you can join our conversation if you want to call us, and I invite you to do that, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. What's your take about what's been happening down here in South Philadelphia, also all over the city? We'll be right back. This is Radio Times on Radio Row. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, talking with Dick Pullman and Robert Costa, and we've been spending the week here at the DNC talking about what's been happening inside this building and outside the building, of course, all over the city as protests have been taking place as well. And I do want to play one more clip from last night, and this is Vice President Joe Biden, again, doubling down on Donald Trump at the DNC.
His cynicism is unbounded. His lack of empathy and compassion can be summed up in a phrase I suspect he's most proud of having made famous. You're fired. I mean, really, I'm not joking. Think about that. Think about that. Think about everything you learned as a child, no matter where you were raised. How can there be pleasure in saying you're fired? He's trying to tell us he cares about the middle class. Give me a break. That's a bunch of malarkey.
And you don't hear the word malarkey every day, but we just heard that from Vice President Joe Biden. To you, Robert Costa, any chance of lock him up last night inside the convention?
There were some chants about Trump, but mostly it was from the Bernie Sanders people who were frustrated with the selection of Tim Kaine and the whole corporate bent in their minds of the Democratic Party. But that was a vocal minority. That was not the overwhelming part of the night. I think what the Trump point I just kept encountering in the convention hall and on the floor was, if there's anything that's going to pull together this Democratic Party this year, it's Donald Trump. Even if you're lukewarm about Secretary Clinton on the Democratic side, you don't want to see Trump. And that seemed to be the thread running through it all.
Well, certainly Bernie Sanders underscored that, Dick Pullman. And we've had some Bernie Sanders supporters on the show who said, okay, we'll vote, we'll support, we'll maybe even campaign for Hillary Clinton. But not everyone is on board. And, mm-hmm. I mean, this is a big country. People have diverse ideas. It was a tough fight for this Democratic nomination.
Yeah, it was. But, you know, I can't help but think, though, that when I see survey of Bernie Sanders voters during the primary, ask what they're going to do this fall. And something anywhere from 75 to more than 80% of them say they're going to vote for Secretary Clinton. And, you know, the people we hear in the hall, I mean, by definition, if you're a Sanders delegate to the convention, you are likely to be among the most passionate of the Sanders voters. So I don't think they're necessarily representative of the millions who are out there who, you know, they favored Sanders, but you know, when it comes down to the fall, they're not going to sit home because they recognize, you know, the larger, shall I put it this way, existential threat. President Obama spoke to them directly last night. It wasn't just in the paragraph where he praised their passion and their commitment, but it was also, there was one passage where he basically said, democracy's hard, and just because you disagree with someone on one issue, how is it, that's no reason to sit home, you know, and just, you know, wash your hands of it. I think he was mostly directing his attention at, you know, sort of centrist voters, maybe independents, disillusioned Republicans who might want to come over. But I think he definitely, those two passages directed at Bernie's people were equally important.
Let me go back to you, Robert Costa, and then we got some comments here I want to read as well. But I wonder if we talk about two Americas, and I wonder if we're seeing two Democratic parties. A lot of lofty language that we're hearing down here about a living wage, about income inequality, and yet we know lobbyists and big-pocketed donors are spending millions of dollars in this city, having very fancy parties for Democrats and their allies and friends. How do we reconcile these two parts of the party?
Well, Dick mentioned earlier the speech by former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. And I think that was one of the more undercovered but really crucial moments last night, because you have this business class in the country, moderate Republicans, moderate Democrats, independents, business people, Wall Street people. They're really skeptical of Trump, and you see them migrating toward the Democratic side. And as the Democratic Party makes its case and pitches the business class in the country, they're winning over some converts like Bloomberg and others. But you're right, Marty, because even as the Democrats try to expand their appeal and have this kind of mature presentation to the country, there's this animated and agitated part of the Democratic base that wants more, that wants a progressive platform, that wants to see wholesale change, not incremental change. And that's the tension here at the Democratic National Convention.
Let me read some comments. We have a comment from John from Princeton. If you say bomb on a plane, even as a joke, you're arrested. So why isn't Trump getting the same backlash for joking about foreign cyber threats? A Facebook comment from James. Dick Pullman, does his speech last night cement President Obama as one of the greatest presidents ever, worthy of a monument figuratively or literally? Are we ready to do that, Dick Pullman? A little premature, perhaps?
Well, I'm not sure the rock at Mount Rushmore could withstand any anymore, chiseling. But I think, let's just say, I think that the Obama Presidential Library, and the site was just announced this week, will probably be very well attended. What's hard to tell is that presidents, when they leave office, are often thought of one way, and then years later they're thought of another way. You know, you have historical revisionism and everything, and, you know, Harry Truman was at his nadir when he left office. Now he's considered great, and they were quoting him in half the videos.
They were.
Last night. It's hard to see, but there is I think it's very interesting that Obama's leaving office with extremely sturdy poll ratings, you know, roughly double what George W. Bush had when he left. And maybe that's also a function of, you know, people looking at Trump and Clinton. I don't know. But I think there's a lot of people out there who watched last night and they said, wow, we're going to miss this guy.
Let me read a couple more. A tweet from Walt. Good point. This convention is void of specific ideas and policies, just platitudes about America. A tweet from Nate. As strong as the DNC has been and as terrible as Trump is on many levels, I have terrible fear that he is unstoppable. And Robert Koss, it's probably too soon to know. They're several months ahead. We've got some debates and, you know, who knows what's going to be happening either domestically or around the world. But I think for some Democrats, that is a fear.
Well, it's a legitimate fear, because if you look at the recent polls, Donald Trump is very competitive. He's right there with Secretary Clinton. And the Democratic convention, for the most part, with Bernie Sanders rallying around Clinton, with the speeches by Biden and President Obama, if she doesn't get a bump out of this convention and the way it's been really kind of well done from a political perspective and coherent, I'm not so sure Democrats are going to be that happy, because this is the kind of convention you expect a big bump. But Trump's, in spite of all of his comments, he's there because, as we were talking about earlier, the country may be itching for a little change. And also there's this groundswell of populism that's not even right or left. You see it with people who are frustrated about what they see as their stagnant place in the economy. Even the economy is generally doing better in some respects based on economic data. And it's just that feeling out there that fueled Bernie and that's fueling Trump. And it's populism, it's incendiary, and it's a little angry.
Let me read one more tweet, and then we're going to say goodbye to the two of you. This is a tweet from Amy saying, I love the way Mike Bloomberg really put into focus how even Trump's business practices are poor as well as his character. And that's, what, one billionaire or multi-billionaire to another?
A
self-described billionaire.
Yeah. I think I'm glad. In fact, I'm very glad that Bob said that he thought that Bloomberg's speech was undercovered, because after I leave here, I'm actually going to work up a second column today about Bloomberg's speech. Because I thought what was interesting to me, I was trying to think, all right, so he's an independent. He was there to probably try to sway independents. And there's a whole school of thought out there, maybe it's contested, but there's a whole school of thought that that in this day and age, with all our polarization, there's actually relatively few, purely independent people, that if you really scratch the surface, most people who call themselves independent vote consistently for one party or another. So, you know, on that level, I wonder what kind of impact he might have or what his message might have. But if we're talking about maybe independent is the wrong definition, maybe the definition it should be undecideds. Mm. And so maybe if we're talking about a billionaire from the billionaire class who knows Donald Trump and can either vet him or not, that might be enough to sort of sway some undecideds.
Well, on that note, Dick Pullman, thank you for stopping by Radio Row at the DNC and joining us on Radio Times.
My pleasure.
National political columnist at WHYY's Newsworks, and Robert Costa, thank you for joining us as well up in Center City at WHYY.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Reporter for The Washington Post. Well, we are here on Radio Row, our final day on Radio Row, reporting from and about the Democratic National Convention. And last week, we fact-checked what was said at the Republican National Convention, and now we want to do the same thing for what is being said at the Democratic National Convention here in Philadelphia. And joining us is Angie Drobnik-Holen, editor of PolitiFact. And Angie, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. So based on your truth meter, how have the Democrats done so far this week, broadly speaking?
Well, I would say these conventions are pre-planned in advance. All the speeches are researched and usually vetted. as far as we can tell. And the accuracy level at the convention this week, and even to some extent last week with Donald Trump, has been pretty good. We haven't gotten one pants on fire out of either convention of speeches made at the convention. We've gotten some things made outside of the conventions. Last night, we looked at President Barack Obama's speech. It was a very positive vision he put forward for the country. And we checked two facts out of that speech. They were both mostly true. The first thing he said was that most countries see the United States as stronger and more respected than 8 years ago. The polling data doesn't exactly ask the question that way. It's more just general favorability. But the numbers do show he's on the right track there. That got mostly true.
Mostly true.
He also said, countering Donald Trump, he said illegal immigration and crime are lower than they've been in decades. We rated that mostly true. He's certainly right on crime. Now, there's been some chatter about recent statistics in some cities being up, but the long-term trend is down, and there's really no question about that. We've run it by experts. We've said, do you see this trend turning around? They said, not really. There's some blips in the data, but there are always blips. On illegal immigration, that also seems down. That's harder to measure than crime.
Because it's just hard to measure illegal immigration?
Exactly. The people are coming across the border. They don't want to be caught. But generally speaking, the apprehensions are down, and we don't see anything to contradict that either.
Now, Michael Bloomberg, I believe it was Michael Bloomberg, said that Donald Trump gamed the U.S. visa system in order to hire temporary workers. What did you come up with for that?
That's a very interesting anecdote. This goes back to Trump's resort, Mar-a-Lago, down in Florida. What they are looking for are seasonal resort workers, so house cleaners, waiters, servers, that sort of thing. And what they do is they advertise for American workers, but if they don't get enough applicants or successful hires, the immigration system allows them to bring in foreign workers on visas. That's the general gist of it.
Right.
Now, the reporting has shown that they didn't try very hard to find American workers. That's what it looks like. But having said that, a lot of companies seem to do this. Is it gaming the system? It's following the rules, but the experts we talked to were like, everybody knows these companies are not looking very hard for Americans because they see foreign workers as willing to take lower wages, as willing to put up with conditions that American workers won't put up with. So overall, we rated Bloomberg's statement mostly true.
Bloomberg also, and I don't know how you fact check something like this, also called Donald Trump. He said, I'm a New Yorker and I know a con man when I see one. Is it possible to even fact-check something like that?
You know, that's an intriguing one that I should talk with my team about. We've done a lot of fact-checks on Donald Trump's business practices. And it seems, overall, he stays within the legal system. Some of his companies have declared bankruptcy. That's legal. A company, when they have more debts than they can pay out, they get to go to the bankruptcy system. A lot of lawsuits associated with Trump and his businesses. Again, and Trump has been pretty forthright about this. He says, I'm a businessman. I use the system. He talked about this with his taxes. He said, why would I want to pay a lot of taxes?
Which may be why we don't see his taxes.
Right. So, the thing that stands out to me as a fact checker with these business practices is, they don't sound great to how you would, they don't sound great, like integrity, fair dealings, that sort of stuff. But none of them are illegal. So, I mean, and I think that can raise issues with the voters about, what does our system permit and what does it not permit? And I think we're going to see.
Which is a good question, don't you think?
Yeah, I do think it's a good question. And I think we're going to see more discussion around that. Certainly, I think that's one of the points that Bernie Sanders and his supporters have been trying to raise a lot. And Trump raises it himself, too. He makes this argument, I know the system, so I can fix the system. Now, he doesn't have a lot of specific policy proposals, and we've been looking at that, too, with both candidates trying to pin them down on all their policies. But that's kind of the tenor of some of these discussions.
This has come up in the last 24 hours, whether Donald Trump said he knew Vladimir Putin very well. And apparently something he said last November, now he's saying he doesn't know Vladimir Putin. This is a very complicated story, obviously. And it's a bit of I said perhaps, but how do you investigate something like
that?
Yeah,
we haven't published on that yet. We likely will. You know, sometimes Donald Trump gives a certain impression, and we were talking about this yesterday among our team. Like some of his comments, he didn't say exactly that he had met Putin, but it gave the impression that he did. We looked at this in the Republican primary. I believe it was Carly Fiorina who said she met Putin, and it was like
a green room somewhere.
Yeah, if memory serves. I mean, like the primary, boy, doesn't that seem like a long time ago now? But yeah, so we'll be looking at that. I certainly think this week with the Russians and his comments about are the Russians hacking into emails, I think we're all going to be looking at the Russian angle and those connections
there. Or seeming to
encourage
it, or certainly not being critical of whatever is happening with Russians hacking the DNC.
That's right. That's right.
We're almost up in a break here, but is it possible to fact check something like Bill Clinton's story of their marriage in about 40 seconds?
You know, we did not do that story. I saw some other people did look at whether he actually said, like, don't marry me, because in interviews Hillary Clinton has said, well, it didn't happen that way. I mean, these are those kinds of family romance anecdotes. It's like, how are we going to pin this down? Because it does go back decades. And
people remember their own life marriage probably in unique ways.
Yeah,
sometimes individualized ways.
Although we have done a lot of fact checks on candidate biography at PolitiFact, this one strikes me as not really one that we can get definitive proof on one way or the other.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Angie Drobnik-Holen, and she's editor of PolitiFact. And PolitiFact, one of several fact-checking organizations that have been fact-checking both the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And we're hoping to speak with John Fetterman, the mayor of Braddock, Pennsylvania, stopping by here at our tiny little table on Radio Row. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times on Radio Row at the Democratic National Convention. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking with Angie Drobnik-Holen, editor of PolitiFact. And we are fact-checking some of what has been said all this week in Philadelphia at the DNC. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Earlier this week, U.S. Representative Joseph Crowley of New York said that Donald Trump collected $150,000 after September 11th. This was a federally funded program. I think it was intended for small businesses. You gave this, I believe, a half true. Can you talk us or walk us through that?
Yes, this was some federal funds that Trump's business qualified for his building at 40 Wall Street. We rated it half true because he did collect the money. That part is accurate. But then Crowley says that even Trump said his properties were not affected. Well, Trump was talking about his properties. He meant that the buildings were still standing. I mean, in that sense, they were not affected. But the whole neighborhood was shut down, and he received the money to keep the building open, to allow for storage and people to use the building. So in that sense, he was affected just like all the neighborhood was. So we rated it half true because, again, this makes it sound like he was scamming the program. And we didn't find any evidence for that. It looks like he was eligible for the program and took the money that he was eligible for.
There is a strong perception about Hillary Clinton that she is untruthful, maybe even a liar. And we have some comments I'll be reading as well. You're someone, and you and other organizations have been fact-checking her and the other candidates. What is your analysis of how truthful or untruthful Hillary Clinton is?
You know, when I look at Hillary Clinton's record on our site, the statements we've chosen to check, she does pretty well. About half of her statements get rated either true or mostly true. She's not somebody who goes out and says things that are inaccurate on their face. Now, having said that, she can be very lawyerly. She phrases her statements extremely carefully, especially when she's under attack or under scrutiny. Some of her statements in this email controversy have been the kind of statements you might give if you were under oath. You know, she's and they've kind of evolved. I mean, I think she saw her email system as something that she could do. It doesn't seem to... It may have been technically within the rules, but it certainly violated the spirit of the open records law. And there, while there's been a lot of talk about classification, one of the bigger issues experts have raised is that this is a transparency issue. The way she did it skirted archival rules and that sort of thing. So I think some of the perception of Hillary Clinton as not honest comes from this kind of secretiveness and this lawyerly approach to answering questions.
So even when she says she regrets it, it's a mistake. She said that several times. Does that undo what she did or even undo that perception? Then I'll read a couple of comments here.
Well, I think that's one thing that voters are grappling with right now. I mean, the email controversy has been one that's been very difficult to fact check because for a long time we didn't know what was going on. Now, the FBI came out with their report. There were a few emails that were marked classified. Now, they weren't marked with a big header the way I think she was likely expecting them to be marked, but they were within the text of the emails. Had classification marks. And the head of the FBI said, like, this is not the way you want to handle government email by putting it on a private server. It's just not good practice, to say the least.
Well, and this has dogged her for a year, and I'm sure it will dog her into November. We'll see what happens after that, obviously.
Yeah.
Let me read a couple of comments from MM. I think everyone knows Trump was tongue-in-cheek talking about Russia and hacking Hillary's emails. But the broader point is, if a hacker could get into the DNC, what's to stop one from getting to her 30,000 missing emails? She did lie to all of us for last year and won't hold a press conference. You give her a free pass on. And there is a question. I don't know if this is in your bailiwick or not, but she keeps the press kind of at arm's length, I think at her peril at this point. I think she has to kind of get over that if she wants to sort of move beyond some of these issues. But she creates her own problems, it seems, at times.
My reaction to that comment is I don't see her as getting a free pass. There's been so much coverage over her emails. We've done coverage over it at PolitiFact. We scrutinize her statements just as much as Trump's. But she's a wonk. She studies. She knows her policy areas. She doesn't make a lot of factual errors. Whereas Donald Trump is a very different candidate. He speaks off the top of his head. He extemporizes. I'm not so sure his comment about Russia was a joke.
Hmm.
It didn't particularly sound that way to me. Although with Trump, again, sometimes it's hard to tell. He clearly says a lot of things to be provocative and garner headlines.
Let me read you another comment. This is from Tony. He says, a coworker of mine was spreading an email years about President Obama, and I found clear refutation of the email claims on Snopes. I replied also, everyone on the email would see it as false, and the original sender replied, I don't care whether it's true or not. I can imagine him doing it, and that's the point. And I wonder, as a fact checker, is that what you're up against? Which is, you can give people the facts, but if it doesn't fit with their version of reality, they could reject it.
I would say we're not writing our fact-checking reports for people who don't want to change their minds. We're writing for people who are really interested in what the factual evidence shows, who are open-minded to the extent that they do care if the facts show something different. We're really proud of the fact that we're independent, that we can call the shots the way we see them. We don't have a political outlook. We don't have to be for any side. So I think we're writing for those people who do care and who are open-minded. For the people who've already made up their minds, I mean, sometimes they seem to read us just so they can send us the easy email saying, you're so wrong, which is kind of funny. But that's where we're at right now.
And how do you prepare for tonight for Hillary Clinton's speech?
Well, this is the culmination of watching the campaign for months. So we'll be interested to see what some of her talking points are. I expect it to be very policy-oriented speech. Although, you know what? You never know. Sometimes these candidates surprise us. We've talked about, on PolitiFact in our reports, we expect her to talk about the minimum wage, about women's issues, about climate change, the economy. These are some of the key themes of her campaign. Now, maybe she'll zig and make it entirely personal. I don't know. So we'll be watching along with everyone else tonight to see what she does say.
Well, Angie Drobnik-Holland, thanks for stopping by Radio Row to talk to us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Editor of PolitiFact. Well, sitting across from me right now is John Fetterman. He is the mayor of Braddock, Pennsylvania. Ran for the U.S. Senate in the Democratic primary this year in Pennsylvania. Got about 20% mm-hmm. of the vote. And John Fetterman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for joining us. I know you were an ardent, and probably still are in many ways, an ardent Bernie Sanders supporter. Are you comfortable with Hillary Clinton as your nominee?
I'm supremely comfortable with Hillary Clinton as the nominee. In fact, I'm enthusiastic about it. And, you know, my whole thing moving forward till now until November is doing anything that I can in my own small way to make sure Secretary Clinton is elected president. She is an outstanding candidate, supremely qualified. And I say to any Bernie or Bust folks or anyone that's kind of like on the fringe, like, you gotta, you know, we can't take the chance. It's like you cannot afford to lose this election to Donald Trump. That is not the legacy that Sanders had envisioned for his movement. And if you sit out, you're effectively helping Donald mm-hmm. Trump at this point.
Well, we've had some Bernie or Bust people on the show, and mm-hmm. I'm sure you've talked to them. They've been all over the city. Yeah. They're not happy with their candidate, Bernie Sanders, supporting and endorsing sure. Hillary Clinton. They think of her as a criminal. We've seen that. Mm-hmm. We've heard that as well. Do you think these people are convincible or?
Absolutely. In fact, just yesterday we were contacted on my Facebook page. A group of Sanders, diehard Sanders supporters, wants to meet with me. And they say, hey, come and convince us. And I plan on doing that and taking as many groups up as possible all over the state to just explain the case for Secretary Clinton. I mean, out in my part of the state, my base, Western Pennsylvania, you know, Donald Trump's message can resonate. You know, you have a lot of towns that have lost a good deal of their population, a lot of their infrastructure, free trade. And I'm mayor of one of those communities. And I'm here to remind everybody that we are always going to be better with somebody who's supremely qualified like Hillary Clinton than with a con man like Donald Trump. Donald Trump's ascendancy is like some bad Tom Clancy novel. Like, you know, you have this megalomaniac take and hijack a party, and I don't understand how anybody could seriously entertain voting for him, and whatever your political beliefs are.
But there are people, as you said, living in Western Pennsylvania, yeah. in Braddock, probably around mm-hmm. Braddock, who feel very strongly about Donald Trump, that he speaks for them.
I think they don't feel strongly for Donald Trump. I think they feel strongly that they've been left out. They feel like they've been left behind. And I understand that. I've been mayor of that community now for 11 years. And from my standpoint, we have to do everything that we can to remind those voters that we're going to be better with somebody like Secretary Clinton.
I want to play something that Michael Bloomberg said last night. Mm-hmm. Of course, a billionaire from New York, a businessman, mayor of New York. He was speaking as an independent, and he was talking about the importance of Hillary Clinton. Let's sure. give it a listen, then mm-hmm. we'll talk about it.
To me, this election is not a choice between a Democrat and a Republican. It is a choice between who is better to lead our country right now. Better for our economy, better for our security, better for our freedom, and better for our future. There is no doubt in my mind that Hillary Clinton is the right choice this November. So tonight, as an independent, I am asking you to join with me, not out of party loyalty, but out of love of country.
Yeah. Do you think he speaks to this is a billionaire, yeah. of course, talking, speaks to some of the concerns that you have?
I have a lot of respect for Michael Bloomberg, and certainly he's one of the richest men in America. I don't think he's broken any new grounds other than just this. There's an imperative to elect Secretary Clinton. Didn't he say that I want to vote for the same candidate, too?
He did say
yeah.
that.
So I think that's really, there's no granular arguments on education and environment when you're talking between Trump and Secretary Clinton. It's like, you know, who wants to have Russia hack our emails? Who wants to build a wall? Who wants to ban Muslims compared to thoughtful policy ideas and an entire career spent in public service helping the most vulnerable members of our society. So, and I say this not as a mayor, not as a former Senate candidate, not as a Democrat. I say this as the father of three young children, all under the age of 8. I do not want to have to explain Donald Trump's been elected president the day after to my three kids, because my wife is Brazilian. She was a dreamer in this country, and my children are half Brazilian, and they're worried. They don't understand. They think Donald Trump would be coming for anyone that's not from this country originally, and that's scary, and that's sad, and we have to do everything we can, and that's my message to the Bernie or bust crowd is like, look, if you're not going to vote for Secretary Clinton, or you're thinking about voting for a third party candidate, you know, it's, you know, you're trying to make America great mm-hmm. again. And we can't have that.
That's yeah. a vote for Trump.
Yeah, it's
saying.
A vote for Trump. And I ran the most progressive campaign in my race, and I came up short. And I didn't like take my marbles and go home and be like, you know, it's like, you know, get over it. We need to elect Secretary Clinton as president.
You know Bernie Sanders. How is he doing? I was watching him last night as he was sitting listening to the speeches, and he fought a really hard campaign.
Yeah.
You know a little bit about losing, if I can put it that way. How is he doing?
Well, you know, Bernie has so much to be proud of. He brought a lot of the progressive planks, you know, into the DNC platform. It's the most progressive as it's ever been. And he revolutionized campaign financing, too. You know, all of his, you know, it's become a joke now, the $27 average donor.
So we all know right?
So he's broken, you know, through on a lot of different fronts, and you can't feel bad about that. And he did, he passed the torch, so to speak, to Secretary Clinton in such a dignified manner that I think really helped unify the party. And it's folks like me in my own little world in Western Pennsylvania and here in the state to do what I can to kind of take that message of, you know, let's get behind Secretary Clinton. And because the stakes have never been higher. And the thing is, if Donald Trump wins, more than likely they keep the Senate. They'll win the Senate. And then they already have the House. And then they pick the next 2 to 3 Supreme Court justices. Then say goodbye to Obamacare. Say goodbye to a woman's right to choose. Say goodbye to any chance of climate control legislation. So, I mean, the stakes literally couldn't be higher. This isn't pants on fire, skies falling. This is the reality in American politics today.
Do you see Hillary Clinton as a revolutionary character? That certainly was one of the messages of Bernie Sanders, which is this is a revolution.
I see Secretary Clinton as the perfect person for the job. And I have a 4-year-old little girl who is really proud the fact that now, you know, women, you know, can run and they're going to be president. I mean, this is huge. I mean, there's so many good things about Secretary Clinton's candidacy. And if you go to Jill Stein, the third party candidate, in our Wikipedia page, you know, she matches up 99% of the time with Senator Sanders. But guess what Secretary Clinton does? 91% of the time. So you're going to burn it all down for that 8% that you don't ideologically perfectly agree with. We just can't have that. And nobody can out progress me on the left. You know, mayor of the poorest town in the community. You know, first to have officiate a same-sex wedding. My wife is an undocumented. I mean, like, super progressive. And I'm, like, enthusiastically supporting Secretary Clinton.
We're almost out of time here. Pennsylvania described as a battleground state. We're going to...
Oh, yeah. I mean, you
see the fight happening here in the Commonwealth?
Yeah, well, Trump's main path comes through Pennsylvania. And if we can stop him here in Pennsylvania, that hopefully excludes him, that mathematically excludes him of any chance of getting to 270.
Well, John Fetterman, thank you so much for stopping by Radio Row and joining us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Mayor of Braddock, Pennsylvania. He ran for the U.S. Senate, the Democratic primary here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Fourth of 4 guests in this first hour of Radio Times. But do stay with us. We'll be right back, and we're staying on Radio Row. We'll be right back.
Hey, you want to get some-